the Supreme Court handed down a landmark decision Monday that gives states the go-ahead to legalize betting on sports. The court ruled 6-3 to strike down the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. That's a law from 1992 that barred state-authorized sports gambling with some exceptions. We're talking about what changes around sports betting here in the U.S. on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's bring in Keith Miller. He's a distinguished professor of law at Drake University, where, among other things, he studies gaming law. Keith, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, let's start with this ruling from the Supreme Court. Can you break down what exactly this ruling does and doesn't do?
Yes, I can. I think although the ruling in some ways is technical and constitutional language and so forth, I think it can be summarized fairly briefly. First, the court said that if Congress wanted to prohibit sports betting in the U.S., it could do that. It could pass a law that directly prohibited sports betting. The problem here was that Congress tried to accomplish that same objective by telling the states that they couldn't pass laws that authorize sports betting. And the court said, Congress, if you want to regulate sports betting directly, you can, but you cannot tell the states what to do. The Constitution doesn't permit Congress to tell states how to legislate and what to legislate. And the technical term for that is commandeering. And the court said that that was a violation of our system of federalism and the 10th Amendment.
How did the justices argue this? Where did they come down?
Well, that's one part of the decision, which I think that when it came out, the result wasn't a complete surprise, because during the oral arguments back in December, several of the justices had expressed agreement with the argument that Congress had overstepped its bounds. I think what was surprising was how emphatic the court's decision was. This was a decisive repudiation of the federal law by seven justices of the court. Frequently after Supreme Court decisions, everyone has to read and reread the court's opinion to find out exactly what they meant. There's none of that here. There's no gray area. This is a clear-cut victory for New Jersey and any state that wants to offer sports betting.
Yeah, so New Jersey has really been out in front on this. What is happening in New Jersey? Governor Chris Christie was ecstatic after this ruling.
Yes, I think that he feels like he deserves a victory lap for this. New Jersey has shown a great deal of tenacity. Beginning in 2011, when their voters passed a constitutional amendment to allow sports betting, and then the legislative processes set up a system for regulating sports betting in 2012, and then what followed was this 6 years of court battles that culminated in the Supreme Court decision on Monday. So I think the people in New Jersey, Chris Christie, and some of the legislators in New Jersey feel like their perseverance really needs to be recognized. And I think people who have been interested in this do believe that New Jersey's tenacity was really what turned the tide here.
So New Jersey had put in place all the mechanisms, all the systems were in place. They just needed lights on.
Yes, New Jersey is ready to go. They will likely be offering sports betting within a couple of weeks. They've been preparing for this. They have the infrastructure set up to have sports betting. That'll happen very soon.
And when you say sports betting, what do we mean by that? What games are we talking about? What sports are we talking about?
Well, that will be determined on a state-by-state basis. And it's really one of the fascinating parts of the sports wagering industry, how much it has grown and developed and evolved with, as they say, new products. The traditional sort of sports betting is what we call point spread betting, where a person bets on one team either to cover a point spread that is set by the bookmaker, the sports book, either to cover that point spread or not. Mm-hmm. That's the traditional form of sports betting. But what is evolving is a variety of different types of sports bets. Most prominently now is what we call in-game sports betting, where someone can bet during the game on particular specific things that may happen. For example, New Jersey may allow bets on issues like will the Milwaukee Brewers score a run in the next inning? And someone could bet on that during the game.
Wow, so it's really unfolding very quickly as the game unfolds there in that form of sports betting.
Yes, it is. There's no question about it that the traditional form of point spread sports betting, I think very soon will be viewed as, if not a dinosaur, it'll be something that is not nearly as prominent as these other forms of sports betting, such as the in-game sports betting.
Yeah.
And, of course, the in-game sports betting has its own set of problems. If someone has any sort of gambling problem or gambling disorder, this ability to bet, make a number of bets on a particular game and within a game can be a very dangerous situation for them.
Keith Miller is with us as we talk about the Supreme Court's ruling on Monday allowing states to decide on sports betting. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Is this something you'd like to see Wisconsin get in on? Have you ever bet on sports? And if so, what was the appeal to you? Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Terry now from Green Bay. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having this conversation so quickly after that Supreme Court case.
Sure.
I'm not entirely opposed to sports betting, but my concern is that so many states are going to be so gung-ho at this that they're not going to take a critical eye and take a look at all the aspects of the both pros and cons of this. And even though Wisconsin, I'm sure, will eventually pass this because of some special interest money or something, I think we need to ask ourselves, should we be doing this, and is it morally right? I mean, like the professor was just talking about is gambling addictions and those suffering. I don't want to lose somebody that's going to lose $1,000 on a pitch at a Brewers game and then can't afford to buy their kids college books the next day.
Terry, thanks so much for the call. Terry bringing up the moral obligations of states as they, you know, think about whether they want to go ahead with this. We know that there are some bills in the works in Illinois and Iowa, our neighbors already. Keith Miller, what impact does this have?
Well, there's no question about it that when I teach my gaming law class to my students, I tell them you don't have to be a big fan of gambling to study the law of regulated gaming. You study it because it's not going to go away. States and local communities have become almost addicted to the revenues that they get from taxes on gambling. And so long as that happens, it's a surrogate for taxes on income and property. State legislatures are always looking for ways to get that additional revenue. And as the caller said, I completely agree. States, policymakers have to be aware of the problems that can be created by having any new form of gambling. And with sports betting, there are certainly problems that can be created for people who have gambling disorders. The demographics of sports betting are such that many young people favor sports betting, and they are usually identified as being at risk for gambling disorders.
And the American Gaming Association estimated that bets placed on the game totaled roughly $4.7 billion prior to this year's Super Bowl, with a majority of those bets being placed illegally. Another piece of this conversation as we look at the big business of gaming here on the morning show. States that want to offer legal sports betting may now do so following the High Court's ruling Monday, and New Jersey is certainly ready to pounce, as we've been talking about. Delaware, Mississippi, New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia are among the states expected to quickly get into the legal bookmaking game. We're talking about sports gambling on the morning show. Drake University Law Professor Keith Miller stays with us. You can join in with your questions, your perspectives on sports gambling at 800-642-1234. So is this something you'd like to see Wisconsin get in on? Have you ever bet on sports? And if so, what was the appeal for you? Would you cross state lines to do sports gambling? Call in. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll get back to the conversation right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. For nearly 26 years, Nevada has been the only state allowed to offer a wide variety of sports betting options. A record $4.8 billion was wagered at Nevada sportsbooks last year. Many other states are seeing dollar signs with the Supreme Court ruling on Monday. We're talking about how the High Court cleared the way for states to legalize sports betting here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than a dozen states have introduced sports betting bills this year as a way to expand legalized gambling as a source of government revenue. Keith Miller stays with us for the conversation. He's a law professor at Drake University, where he studies gaming law. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Do you think Wisconsin should get on board with sports gambling? Are you into fantasy football? Do you see a distinction between fantasy football and sports betting? You can call in 800-642-1234, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Keith Miller, Nevada was the only state where single-game sports betting was legal. Can you give us some legal history? How did Nevada become Nevada?
Well, Nevada has a long history with regulated gambling, of course, really beginning in 1931. As for sports betting, it developed much later than that. Really, it wasn't until the 1970s that sports betting became more prominent in that state. The problem with that led to the Supreme Court decision really can be traced to the 1990s, when a number of people in Congress wanted to pass this law that prohibited sports betting. And they couldn't get the votes that would prohibit sports betting in the U.S., and that's why they came up with this Professional Amateur Sports Protection Act, which would accomplish the same objective by telling the states they couldn't pass a law that authorized sports betting, but that's what the court struck down. So now Nevada will not be the only state with sports betting.
So this really does date back then to the Professional and Sports Betting Act in 1992. What's behind the court's ruling? Was it that they actually supported this kind of gambling, or they felt that it should be left up to states, really, to decide how they want to proceed on this issue?
Well, that is an aspect of the case that I think we need to keep in mind. This was really not a case where the court considered the wisdom of sports betting. This really had very little to do with gaming law. This was a constitutional law case where the court looked at a federal statute and asked whether or not Congress was acting within its power under the U.S. Constitution by restricting the states in this way. And the court's conclusion, as I said earlier, rather emphatic conclusion, was that this statute, by directing the states to take action or not take action, offended the Constitution. So as much as people in the gaming world think this was really struck a blow for sports betting, the court really does not take any stand at all, take any position at all about the wisdom of sports betting or whether the states should offer sports betting. And the court even acknowledges that if Congress wanted to pass a law that completely prohibited sports betting, they could do it.
We're getting some comments here on this on WPR.org. This comment from the so-called cold beer. Allow gambling and gaming. I'm not a gambler or gamer. I do play a few bucks on high lotto stakes, but I'm not very lucky, so I stay away. I support anyone who wants to gamble. It should be legal. We can gain tax dollars spent that are spent in other states. So really here, we're seeing dollar signs. States are looking at this as a revenue generator.
They are, and that is a very controversial part of sports betting. One of the big drives for regulating sports betting, legalizing and regulating sports betting, is the hope that it would generate considerable revenue for states. And I think that if legislators believe that sports betting is going to really be a gold mine of revenue for the state, they're going to be very disappointed, because sports books do not create a lot of revenue that can be taxed. They operate with very low margins, so the amount of money that sports books win, and that would be what we'd base our tax on, really is not that great.
So as of now, Wisconsin does not appear to be in the mix at all of states looking to immediately legalize sports gambling. Let's listen to Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker addressing the ruling yesterday with reporters.
So between the Constitution and the compacts that are in place already in the state of Wisconsin, it really won't have a bearing one way or the other in Wisconsin.
And yet there is this strong gaming presence here in Wisconsin. Each of the state's 11 tribes operates at least one casino, and imagine there would be at least some interest in offering sports betting. Is this something you see coming to Wisconsin in any way?
Well, as the governor says, sports gaming is expressly prohibited by the Wisconsin Constitution. I think there's also statutes that say the same thing, and that there are provisions in the state tribal compacts that prohibit sports gaming. So it would take a fundamental change, and I think probably it would take a constitutional amendment in Wisconsin to allow sports betting. In any event, I think that Wisconsin would be a state where any movement toward legalized sports betting will be a very slow process. If one were looking at which states will have sports betting the soonest, Wisconsin would be very, very low on that list.
Let's bring in Mark now, joining us from Dodgeville. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Just as a comparison for how states might obtain revenue, using the gaming thing and using the state of Nevada as the sole state example, If the only way the conversation goes is we should find ways of obtaining revenue, and this looks like a good one, you only have the state of Nevada to use as a reference. But if you use the state of North Dakota as the sole state that has a state-owned bank and compare the revenues that the state of North Dakota obtains when the citizenry of North Dakota themselves own the state bank, you at least then have the option of seeing something else by which states can obtain revenue. And I think it would be a valid comparison to look at the possibilities, because there are a lot of states that are looking at having a state-owned bank similar to North Dakota, and the revenues, I would suspect, are much more substantial than what a state might get from gaming. And if in Wisconsin, gaming is not allowed, the state ownership of a bank would just seem to make sense to a lot of states.
Keith Miller, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that that sort of analysis on a state-by-state basis is something that state legislators absolutely need to engage in. The issue with gambling, gambling revenues that can be taxed, is I believe that now in our society and across state governments, that taxing gambling proceeds is viewed as really low-hanging fruit, that it's a justification for allowing gambling if we say we're going to tax it and the tax proceeds are going to go to education or infrastructure or to relieve property taxes and things like that. Those are very easy things for legislators to approve of when they see that the tax proceeds are going there. I think what the caller suggests is something that would take considerable amount of study and is something that legislators need to do. But I think gambling revenues have been a little seductive because they are viewed as just being the easiest thing in the world. You allow slot machines, you take the money that's won from the slot machines, you tax it, and rather than having higher property taxes or higher state income taxes, you have this money from gambling, and it's, as I say, very, very seductive.
We're talking with Keith Miller. He is a distinguished law professor at Drake University, where he studies gaming law, talking about the Supreme Court ruling on Monday allowing states to basically set their own course for whether they allow sports betting or not. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the High Court's decision to allow sports betting across the country? Is this something you'd like to see Wisconsin get in on? Have you ever bet on sports? And if so, what was the appeal for you? What questions do you have about the future of sports betting here in the U.S.? 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Keith Miller, even though states will now have some decision-making power to be had here, might we see Congress getting involved here to try and pass some kind of legislation, some kind of federal regulation on this industry?
Yes, that is a big question. One of the big uncertainties is whether Congress will now get involved. And the sports leagues are urging Congress to pass a law that would authorize sports betting, but there would be a federal law that would establish uniform standards of regulation and licensing that states would have to follow. And Senator Hatch, in the last couple of days, has said that he is going to be introducing a bill that would do something along those lines. The leagues make the argument, and many people believe it's persuasive, that it will be too chaotic if each state has its own rules for regulating sports betting. It will be difficult to monitor whether or not there's game fixing. What we really need, according to these people, is a centralized federal effort with the resources to gather information to identify questionable betting activity, the power of federal law enforcement like the FBI to get involved with it. And that's what the leagues are going to be pushing for, is that congressional intervention. And there's no question that the states will resist this. They don't want federal intervention of any kind, and they will argue that the regulation of gambling has historically been something that they have had control of and has not been something that the federal government's been involved in.
Well, as we talk about leagues here, let's look at the NFL, led by Roger Goodell, has long opposed gambling as a threat to the integrity of the game, but the NFL stance on fantasy games has evolved over the years. How does this high court decision impact fantasy sports?
It probably doesn't have much effect on it at all. 2 years ago or so, so much of the focus in the sports world was on the legality of daily fantasy sports. But when the Supreme Court accepted review of this case on sports betting, everyone pivoted and began to look at sports betting. I think what we're likely to see with fantasy sports is more of more interaction or more blending between sports betting and daily fantasy sports. The leading daily fantasy sports companies, DraftKings and FanDuel, both of them have indicated that they want to also establish a sports betting aspect to their business. And I think increasingly we're going to see that fantasy sports will be viewed as just one type of sports betting.
So with the NFL, is the reason why they fought this case so hard is the threat of this chaos having different regulations state by state? Because wouldn't it be great revenue for the NFL?
Well, it's always very difficult. The NFL can, at the same time, they can be very predictable in looking out for their own interests, but also very opaque in the way that those decisions get made. But the NFL has been really intransigent. They've been completely opposed to sports betting. But lately, they anticipated this decision, I think, from the court, and they have been urging that if there's going to be sports betting, it needs to be at a national level. There needs to be federal legislation. But there's no question about it that one of the biggest issues that will arise now is, should the leagues be able to share in the money that is produced from this new form of sports betting? And that's going to be one of the most contentious issues that states will have to face.
I was reading this Sports Illustrated article yesterday, and the author was calling for the NFL to get a gambling czar, to hire a gambling czar. Is that an approach, just a hawk watching over all of this type of regulation from state to state?
Well, all the major sports leagues are going to, and I think they've been in the process of calibrating the type of response they need to be involved in the debate on sports betting, because they definitely want to have input on the way it is legislated and regulated. And within those leagues, there will certainly be people who have a great level of understanding of the gaming industry and expertise about sports betting. It definitely is going to be a transformation.
Let's bring in Paul now, joining us from Middleton. Hi, Paul.
Good morning to you both. The reason for my call is I'm in my seventh decade on this planet, and I voted on the referendum for bringing organized gaming, as they call it, notice the change between gambling and gaming, to make it more palatable. The New Jersey referendum, when Governor Brendan Byrne was the governor of the state of New Jersey, and so Atlantic City became the big casino on the East Coast, the problem there was, of course, initially there was a great inflow of money. Then all these other communities saw the aspect of the money coming in, and they started to pass referendum to get into gambling. And look at Atlantic City now. The Taj Mahal, President Trump had to declare bankruptcy over the Taj Mahal. And also the other ambient gains come in, namely drugs, prostitution, and crime.
Paul, I need to stop you here because we're a little short on time. And Keith Miller, really quickly before we go to a news break, what would you say here?
Well, the reason that New Jersey challenged the federal law related to Atlantic City. They looked at Atlantic City failing, having the financial problems, and sports betting was and is viewed as a way of helping Atlantic City. And it remains to be seen whether that will be effective.
The Supreme Court on Monday cleared the path for states to start offering sports gambling. The justices ruled that a federal law that limited the practice was unconstitutional. Our guide is Keith Miller, a distinguished law professor at Drake University studying gaming law. You can come into the discussion, your questions, your perspectives on sports gambling or sports gaming. 800-642-1234. Are you jazzed about the prospect of legal sports betting? Perhaps here in Wisconsin. Could it ever happen here? Does it have the momentum from voters? You can call in, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to the conversation after a news update on the Ideas Network. Make no mistake, sports betting is still illegal in Wisconsin, and Monday's high court decision doesn't change that at all. However, the ruling has given a jolt of enthusiasm for states to legalize it, and we're talking about that momentum, what it means here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Neighboring states like Illinois and Iowa, for instance, are putting legislation in motion. Would you cross state lines for sports betting? What do you think of the Supreme Court's decision to allow sports gambling across the country? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Drake University law professor Keith Miller stays with us for the conversation. He studies gaming law around the country. Keith, something that Paul in Middleton brought up was interesting is that the migration of the parlance of the word sports gambling to sports gaming, as if gaming is a more accepting word of the act of gambling. Have you seen language changes?
Well, I think the history of those words is disputed. That some people say that using the word gaming is an effort to sanitize the idea of gambling, and I wouldn't say that that's completely mistaken. Although I think that the word gaming is a word that's been around for a lot longer than people recognize, and the typical language it's used now, the typical usage is that there's a gaming industry and that people engage in gambling. Whether that differentiation makes sense to people or whether it's something that simply seems to be an effort to make gambling sound a little more benign, I can certainly understand that perspective.
Paul from Eau Claire's email said, I'm neither a sports fan nor a gambler, but I wish it were legal to bet on sports. Gambling is a tax on people who can't do math, and it benefits responsible adults. Carol in Green Bay is joining us now. Carol, hi.
Hello. My question or my comment is, what about the problem caused by addictive tendencies of some people who will experience financial ruin and for their families? How can the good gained by taxes collected by gambling equal the chaos in individual families? I think gambling should be the word, not gaming.
Carol, thank you. Keith, are states really ready for the repercussions here on what this could do for people who have addiction issues?
I don't think that in the debate and consideration of sports gaming that the issue of the damaging social effects that might come from that, such as disordered gambling, gambling addictions, and that sort of thing, has been a front burner issue. Regrettably, in my opinion, in the gaming industry, oftentimes there is not enough attention given to this issue of problem gambling. And I think that with sports betting, there needs to be an emphasis on, with the amount of money that will be coming in or that we project will be coming in, there needs to be money that is expressly set aside to help deal with these social issues of disordered gambling. Now, what the caller says is something that I think many people feel, and that is there needs to be less gambling so that we don't have to deal with these addiction problems. And that is an argument that I think people who have that feeling, they need to be vocal, they need to be aware of these issues, and they need to speak out and let legislators know their feelings.
So if you could give states some legal advice here on this new terrain, what would you say to lawmakers as states start to look at where do we go from here?
Well, I think each state is going to have to decide according to the state's philosophy about gambling, how it wants to move forward. The state that I live in, Iowa, I think that there is a pretty clear indication that there's support for the state moving forward with a system of sports betting. And I expect the Iowa legislature to do something about that in the next session. But each state, I think, has to look at its own values and its own sense of what they want out of sports betting, whether they think that sports betting is good for the state, whether the trade-off that they get, revenue from the taxes on sports betting balanced against the potential damaging social effects from sports betting, whether or not they strike that balance in favor of allowing sports betting or not.
And I don't think that that is that the answer to that question is going to be the same in all states. I think some states will look at the issue of sports betting and say, we just don't want it. We don't think that it's good for our state. We don't think that it's consistent with the values of our state.
Yeah, I think I was reading yesterday, Iowa looks like we'll be introducing a bill in January. I don't recall the lawmaker's name there. And Illinois has a couple bills in the works on the table. So in nearby states to Wisconsin, it looks like wheels are in motion legislatively here.
Certainly are. And Illinois, because their legislature meets most of the year, has somewhat of an advantage. Iowa's legislature has adjourned for 2018, and they won't be back until January of 2019. But Illinois, I think, is a state that one should keep an eye on, because I think they will be a state that will be going forward with this sports betting legislation. And I believe people in Wisconsin who want to bet on sports, in the next few years, they will be able to go to Illinois or Iowa and do so.
And is this kind of a weekend draw here if we're going to see people cross state lines for sports betting, or is this something that people will be able to do armchair-wise from their homes?
Well, the traditional form of sports betting is what we call the bricks and mortar casino, where someone would go to a property, a casino, and place all their sports bets. But the gaming industry has recognized now that the younger generation especially wants to have the flexibility of placing bets from a mobile device on an app. And the availability of these apps is really what has helped to fuel the increase in sports betting in Nevada. And states which don't include the mobile option, I believe, are really shooting themselves in the foot, because a younger generation, I think, clearly has indicated that though they may go to a bricks and mortar facility sometimes, they want to have the flexibility of placing bets from a mobile app. And that has its own set of problems with how a state regulates it.
All right, so there we go with millennials throwing a wrench into those standalone casino properties.
Well, it certainly could. And it would just be another wrench that they're throwing, because the gaming industry has been very concerned, has been vexed by trying to figure out what sorts of products do they need to offer the millennials in order to attract them to gambling, because there is a belief that the millennial generation does not want to sit down in front of a slot machine and just plug money into it and have games that are completely based on chance, that they want something that's more interactive and skill-based. And sports betting does have a lot of appeal along those lines.
Are we seeing gambling products become more diverse today as you see a younger generation wanting something that's more than has luck involved?
I think so, and that the millennial generation will be driving the development of new sports betting products. As I said earlier, I believe that the typical sort of point spread betting soon will be surpassed by all of these other forms of in-game betting. The attraction of that to the millennial generation is they get instant feedback or frequent feedback. It's really the reason why the belief is that the millennial generation doesn't like horse racing. There's simply too much time that passes between the horse racing. From one race to another, the millennial is standing around saying, well, I don't have anything I can bet on. Mm. With in-game sports betting, they will be able to constantly, within a game, they'll be able to place a number of bets.
So no downtime, no time wasted in terms of wagering, keeping the wagering going? Is that really the goal here?
Yes, because if it's something that attracts the person, they want to place the bet, they want to be engaged, it's a way that they follow the games more closely. This is why the major sports leagues will benefit financially from increased sports betting, is because we know that people who bet on sports consume more television, they consume more streaming video, they are big consumers of the products that the leagues produce, and this helps the leagues get more money for their rights of broadcasting the games. It builds a sort of loyalty that benefits the leagues financially.
So, Keith Miller, with this Supreme Court decision handed down Monday, what are you watching for next here? What's the next step?
Two things, really. First is whether or not Congress indicates a serious interest in getting involved. I question whether or not there's resolve, especially in an election year, that Congress would want to take this on. Second, I think we will need to be looking at which states really want to get involved in this, whether this is something where the floodgates are open and many, many states are going to get in line to offer sports betting, or whether many states will talk about it but will proceed very cautiously and carefully before they take that jump.
So we'll just have to stay close, watch what happens next.
Absolutely.
Well, Keith, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Keith Miller is a distinguished professor of law at Drake University, where, among other things, he studies gaming law. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer provided technical support. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation about sports betting, it happened on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.